and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fabulous director all the way from New York City, one of my favorite places to visit. Hopefully again one day. His film, The Magic Bomb, it's directed by Randy Gordon Gatica?
Gatica.
I am close. Best I can do. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm having a blast. Happy to be in Toronto.
Well, you are for a little while anyway. It's nice and quiet here. You can come out and have a beer with us. You can come over.
I would love that.
So let's start at the beginning. You obviously, I presume, live in New York City from your film?
Yes.
So did you film close to home?
Yes. I read somewhere where Stanley Kubrick made Full Metal Jacket within like a 5.5 ratio of his house. And so I just thought, okay, I'm going to make a movie and I'm going to make it close to home.
Interesting. So when you're filming close to home, New York City is a massive place. I mean, everybody knows that. Do people question you filming, or are they just like, ah, it's New York City, everybody's filming all the time, we won't worry about it?
People will question you. Like, it's a little bit of both. Like, some folks will be like, yeah, I don't care, go away. And other folks will just get kind of weird and question you. And you've got to look for your locations very carefully and plan them out as if you're robbing a bank.
So why don't we just start there before we get into your film. And we're going to discuss the plot a bit, but don't worry, we won't ruin the end. You have an apartment location, and I think maybe you have two apartments, or it could be the same one, just shot with different angles. Was that true? How many apartments did you use?
We use the apartment I live in with my wife and kids a lot. That was like our base of operations. And I have a very, like, making a film like this, you just use every favor you've got in the world. And I had a good friend who had a huge basement, and that turned into a couple of locations. I went to meet with one of the cast members to read them for the part, and I realized, wow, not only are you good for the part, but this would make a great location. So I probably used between about half a dozen different apartments, but my own a lot.
Okay, let's start there. You have a wife and kids. Where do they go while you're filming? Because that must be a big concern for you. Like, okay, I got people coming over. I got everything set up. You guys got to go.
The way I worked it is I planned the majority of the shooting between 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. when my kids were at school.
Perfect.
And my wife was at work.
So they were okay, so nobody noticed anything. Now, let's discuss that basement location. I do want to get into that later, but we get into it now. That is like the biggest basement I've ever seen.
Yes. So about half a dozen locations, and the basement was two different places.
Oh.
It was the friend's basement, which was very large, and one of the cast members had an uncle who had a factory that makes those racks that you hang clothes on.
Yes, that's the one I'm talking about.
Yep. And we use that. And we used it on a weekend when the shop was shut down for the day.
Now, you have a two-floor apartment in one store. I've never seen that before. I thought that was kind of neat in New York City.
Right. And that was the guy, Kenny Knoll, who played Gus, and that was his apartment.
Never seen that. And you do have a restaurant location. Now, how difficult is it to get a restaurant location in New York? Because that used to be paid off.
Again, it's a matter of just talking to the right people and talking to them at the right time and just knowing what to say. Like, I want to make a film here. I'll do it when you're not busy. I'll do it on a Tuesday night. We won't be very obtrusive. We won't interrupt business. You know, planning the scene to shoot at MOS, meaning I'm not recording sound.
Oh, okay.
And you know, it's really a matter of planning every detail.
Interesting. Now, how much planning do you do before you get to a shot then? Let's start right there. Like, is that a day thing? Is that a week thing? Or do you have it in your script ahead of time? Or is it when you actually show up?
I didn't have any money. So I knew I had to plan this like the D-Day invasion. And you plan, you know, you do a shot list, you plan what time you're going to shoot things because you don't have lights, so you want to be where the sun is at the right time. You want to be at places when no one's around so no one will bug you. You'll have to excuse me. Like, I just study directors a lot, and I'll quote things. I hope it's not annoying. But, like, Michael Mann said around the time of Making Heat that it is like robbing a bank. That you're planning every detail. And also you're planning every detail so that when something goes wrong, you can respond. You know, like if you don't have a plan and things change, they change all the time, and you don't have a plan going in, that's when you're really caught flat-footed and you're like, And the worst thing in the world is to be surrounded by actors and they're all looking at you like, well, what do we do?
So when you're shooting your film, I find you used your surroundings a lot. Whenever an actor goes outside, you're using surroundings constantly. And I do find you have some really nice graffiti shots at times. You show really different landscapes, maybe in three blocks. Because I know New York's a lot of different areas. You walk one block, it looks one way, one block's the other way. So did you plan your actor's route, or is that just a little more freestyle as they walk?
I walked around my neighborhood for months just so that I could get the look. And and another thing I would do is Law and Order shoots a lot in New York.
Yes, they do.
And I thought for sure I would end up with the location that had ended up in a Law and Order episode. And I worked my tail off to try to find places that I knew had not been in a previous movie, had not been in an episode of Law and Order. And again, you just plan really well because occasionally something changes or you get inspired. And I just really being prepared is the best thing for recognizing inspiration and being able to go with it.
So you have no money, which you've told us. So you have very little. You don't have lights, which even shocks me. So how did you find your actors? Like, literally, you're saying, we don't have much money, but would you like to do this? Is that your approach?
Well, I mean, it's New York City. You have the best trained actors in the world. They want experience. They want taste. You get a zillion responses. And I would set up an audition. You know, I would look through everyone who submitted. And when they show up, if they see that you're prepared and that you're organized and you know what you're doing, they'll kill yourself for you. Like, you know, the only thing I really had to do was feed them. And I'm a half-decent cook, so.
Interesting. So you had no problems casting. That's good. So why did you decide on your three – oh, you have really like five leads, I guess, but two main ones. And then a bonus one that shows up. And you kind of hold that away from her hidden, I found, most of the film. And did she have a bigger role at any time?
Which one?
The one that comes into the end. The one he meets at the party. I'm trying not to ruin anything here for you.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, that's how it was written. But she was – Maria Young was so good.
Yes.
When I started shooting her scenes, and I was so inspired by her that as we were shooting, I wrote the bathroom scene because I realized I have to have her in another scene. She's so good. And, you know, that's the perfect moment of being prepared and recognizing, wow, I need something. This is a great actress. I want to see her more. And being inspired in the moment and going with it.
So when an actor was reading your script, you do have some racist slurs at one point, which I was taken aback because I don't see that much. How was that in your script? Is that something you thought felt natural? I had no issues with it. I just was shocked it happened, I guess. It's not something I see often anymore.
That's a really interesting question. I'm Mexican American. I grew up in LA, and you know, there's like, you know, and I talk to my friends that I grew up with, and there is this thing that the way you talk when you're just with your own.
I accept that.
And you know, like, in real life, I'm the most progressive liberal guy in the world. And I think folks always have this view that if you're of a certain ethnic minority or a different culture that, you know, and it's like turning the lights on. It's like, you know, like, whoa, you got to hear how people speak when there's no one there.
Yeah.
And like, and if you want to make a movie, you've got to be willing to go there. Two of the cast members, the guy who played Gus, he's a non-actor. He's a musician.
Oh, okay.
And he's a friend of mine. He's been involved with theater, but he had never been an actor. He's mostly been a musician. And he's a friend of mine, not a close friend. And as I was writing the script, I just had a feeling that he'd be right for the part. But I didn't know anything about his background or anything. And I go, hey, Kenny, would you – this sounds crazy, but would you think about doing this? And he, sure. And he takes a look at the script, and we had a few rehearsals, and then we start shooting. And when you make a movie, like, I really got to know him more. And so one day he tells me, he's all, you know, I grew up in the South, right? Like, no. And he's all, yeah. And then he's a really funny guy. And in his own way, he said, yeah, the way you've got this written, it's fairly accurate from what I know about growing up in the South. And that was like, you know, that was a nice sort of, fiction meeting reality in a good way.
Very true. Now, when you were writing about your main problem, your main character, there's a little issue about staying in the country. I don't think I'm ruining a lot there. Was that based on real life or people you know?
It was a combination of people that I've known and what's going on in the country at the moment. You know, everything surrounding immigration right now is just so embarrassing. And, in the near future, when we look back at this time, I think it's just going to be a big moment for so many of, you know, just sheer embarrassment. And you know, like, I'm the most Americanized guy I know, you know, like, and, you know, but like, you know, like, I know my family immigrated to this country, you know, and it's just, it's an interesting question that any of us would feel so strongly against immigration. And, but I mean, like, when you're writing a script and you're making a movie, like, whatever your personal or political beliefs are, you got to put them aside and like, what's going to be the best for the story. And like, and it's a very dramatic situation with the situation of the main character and what he's going through. I wouldn't want to be in his shoes.
No, I wouldn't either. So let's go on. You have train shots. I have seven different shots in the film. You have different cut scenes on the train. There may be more. I may have not counted them early enough. So how many times did you have to ride the train to get all your shots?
A lot. There's you know, because the actors were just giving me their time. There's one sequence where, you know, I'll give you a nice little secret right here to answer your question. There's a sequence where they're all on the train together. I shot each one of them separately and then cut it together.
Oh my God.
But it's awesome to be able, it was hard. It took planning, but like, you know, I mean, that's the magic of filmmaking. I cut it together, and even I was surprised, like, oh, damn, it works.
So nobody in the train said anything to you? I mean, how are you shooting this? With an actual camera or an iPhone, or how are you doing this?
I was shooting it with a camera. And, you know, like the best advice, I have a big brother, and he's like a classic big brother, like just in every way. And he's smarter than me. He's funnier than me. And the best advice he ever gave me was be cool. And it's just this universal thing that no matter what you're doing, just be cool. And if you go on to the New York City subway with actors and you just do your thing, you don't bother anyone, and you just do it, and you're just cool about it, people leave you alone.
Fair enough. That's nice to know. How did you find out about Suitcase Nukes?
What's that?
Suitcase Nukes. How did you learn about them?
I'm one of those weird kids that, you know, like there's a part of me that's still 14, and I love conspiracy theories. You know, like most of, you know, the vast majority of them aren't true, and it's a fascinating subject. Suitcase Nukes. That, you know, it's, you know, we'll never really know how much the CIA or the FBI deals with things like this. It's a great premise for a movie. And I tried to use it. Like, when I learned about Suitcase Nukes, to answer your question, I try to read everything. If something's interesting, it just, like, sticks in my mind. What really freaked me out a few weeks ago was when I did my research into Suitcase Nukes, I had an idea of what kind of damage they could cause. And when I saw that explosion in Beirut and somebody on the internet did a graph of the blast ratio, and then they put it over a map of London and a map of New York, it sort of took my breath away, because that's what I imagined my fictional Suitcase Nuke capable of within the world and fiction of the movie.
That makes perfect sense to me, actually.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate.
Did you have any plans to ever show us the nuke? Because you don't really show us. We discuss a bag. We carry a bag around a lot, but we don't really show what's in the bag ever.
You know, I love the Keith Richards advice of steal everything, steal from everybody good. And, you know, to just be blatantly straightforward, like, I mean, that's just me stealing from Hitchcock.
No, absolutely. I have a question in your script. It says, when people say we're not criminals, shouldn't they say we're not criminals yet?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's a thing I always struggle with, dialogue and characters and just people in general, because we're always all in the motion of saying something and doing something. And, you know, like the two never perfectly meet. You know, it's always hard to get the words and the context just right. And, you know, and also I love the ethical moral question of, if you're thinking about something hard enough, aren't you guilty already?
I agree.
Yeah,
I have to agree with you on that one. I love asking people, how is working with a cat? Because you do have a cat, and he does show up a few times.
That was a great example of inspiration. We showed up to Kenny's house, and he had cats. And I just thought, I'd be stupid not to use this cat. And it's for the character, it's just a great character bit.
Oh, I agree. I think it works perfectly. I think he should have a cat. It makes perfect sense to me.
I wish I could say to you, I wrote it in the script. I didn't. It just happened and I went with it.
But that's the whole – sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I mean, you know, like I have a friend who works on big budget movies who looked at the rough cuts for me. And one of the only things she said was – you've got too much footage of the cat. Trim it back a little bit.
That's fair. I think with indie film, you got to use what you're given. I mean, if the cat works, you use the cat. I totally get that. So how did you find, is this your first film? I don't even know. I didn't do enough research. That's my bad.
Oh, please. I mean, I've just been making films since I was in high school, and each one just got a little bit bigger.
Okay. So what kind of camera are you using? I guess I want to know, because I like the colors bouncing off it. So I'm going to get a little more technical here, because you're not using lights, you said. So,
right.
So how are you getting that color into it and the bleeding? I see it at times through this window.
On the interiors, I had one little light that you would buy in a hardware store, and I used that a lot. I used a Canon 7D when I found out that Lena Dunham had shot her first feature on a Canon 7D. I thought to myself, wow, I can make a feature film now because I own that camera.
Yeah, Tiny Furniture, I think, was the film you're talking about?
Yep.
I've seen it. Okay. The shots of people falling down, to me, it looked like they weren't shot in the same day. They looked like edit shots. Am I wrong, or were they all filmed in one shot?
Wait, which shots of people?
We're right near the end of the film. You have a bunch of people lying on the ground.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Look like I'm trying not to ruin your film, so people wonder why I'm asking very specific questions. How long did it take you film all the boxes and all the landmarks?
You know, I would say that I shot everything over a 6-month period.
Oh, so this was spaced out.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, a lot of it had to be done between 9 to 2.
Yes.
And then, you know, like I would keep the props, like the box and like, okay, nothing to shoot today. Let me jump on the, subway and run up to the Guggenheim Museum. Let me jump to the West Village and just get this shot.
Did anybody question you what you're up to again? Did anybody ask you or didn't care why you're carrying a box and shooting it?
I'll be honest with you. I had the same question as you. It's like, you know, like, because, I mean, after 9/11, we're all sort of paranoid.
That's it. That's exactly what I was thinking.
And, you know, and I would think I'd be paranoid about this dude with the camera walking around with the bolt box, blah, blah, blah. Nobody was. You know, I don't know if that's good or bad.
I think it's just saying people are getting comfortable again. I mean, 9/11 was a little bit while ago, and people are different mindset now. We all have cameras, so they'll figure out somebody will film it. So, go ahead.
Part of it is maybe, you know, it's New York City. Artists do a lot of things.
Yes, absolutely they do. Now, for your next film, are you looking to go something bigger than your this one?
Yeah. I've written a couple of scripts. And I have some producers helping me. And, you know, going back to that preparation thing, I have a script I'd like to do that it's set in a single location so that it's COVID friendly, COVID precaution friendly. And I never had so much fun doing anything as much as I did making this film. It was an absolute blast. And it taught me so much. And you know, and like I said, every film I've done since high school has gotten a little bit bigger.
Okay.
And I would, my next goal is to shoot one of these scripts I've written and shoot it with a decent budget. And, you know, like anything over $0 would be, you know, a luxury.
Okay. Now we have music. You do a lot of music in this film and it's in and out and you have no budget. So where did you get your music from?
It's like the actors. You have a lot of musicians in New York City. They would love to be scoring movies. I couldn't ask anyone, and I, you know, I have a lot of friends that are musicians. I couldn't ask anyone to score the whole movie. But, you know, I got 6 different people together, and they each gave different pieces of music for different parts. Some of the music had already been recorded and existed. And one of the best compliments I've gotten about the movie is the score. And nobody has noticed that it's six different musicians, and I give them credit. And, you know, so, you know, that's an interesting thing. Like, even with the budget, would I do that again? Maybe.
Fair enough. Are you ready for your fun questions?
Yeah.
Your favorite film?
Godfather.
Favorite book on film?
The Godfather.
Fair enough. One piece of advice you would give an aspiring filmmaker?
You just got to shoot stuff and show it to people. Like, you've just got to shoot everything and anything, and you just got to let people see it, and you've just got to let them react to it. And one of the biggest mistakes I see young filmmakers make is when people respond to their work, rather than just listening, they'll start talking before listening to the criticism. And like this film especially has taught me the audience is the best part. Like it's the audience is as important as writing it, shooting it, and editing it. The movie is not done until somebody sees it and they respond.
That is fair. I absolutely agree with you. Before you go, tell everybody where they can find your film so they can see it.
Vimeo On Demand.
That's it. So no Amazon, no nothing.
Well, it's to put it on Amazon, it would, at this juncture, it would end up costing me way more than it costs to make the movie. Like, to put it on Amazon, they want the translations and the subtitles done for foreign languages. That's expensive.
I had no idea.
And it's a, you know, and it's a, yeah, so like for the moment, Vimeo On Demand, which I'm happy about.
Well, thank you for your time and have a great night.
Oh man, thank you. This was a blast.
Okay, bye-bye. Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page? Thank you.